Hi, I'm Tracy Fuller. This is Melissa Boone and Jerome Hagen, and we're from Xbox Research. We'll be talking today about understanding and addressing your players' negative online gaming experiences. Xbox Research is a team who provide consumer-focused entertainment research and insights for gaming at Microsoft. We do research across the end-to-end player experience, so platform research through to Microsoft Studios titles, through to live streaming services like Mixer. We partner directly with development teams to iterate based on consumer feedback and to improve products. And our team has been doing this since the 1990s. Our researchers have a wide range of experience from social psychology, cognitive psychology, through to neuroscience. And we use methods derived from psychological and behavioral research in our work. Everything we're going to talk about today is based on research we've done on online environments, safety, and gaming for everyone. So let's start with some of the things we know about online harassment and negative online experiences. Pew Research ran a survey on online harassment in 2017, and they found 62% of Americans view online harassment as a major problem. 66% had seen someone harassed in some way online, and 41% had personally experienced it. Negative experiences like online harassment are a major problem for online gaming as well, and for our industry as a whole. And when we talk about negative online gaming experiences, there's a whole gamut of experiences. And you know what this looks like when you're online. Anything from personal attacks to disruptive annoyances through to the extreme end of the scale, like doxing and swatting. The topics we're talking about cover all of these. Last month, Phil Spencer, Executive Vice President of Gaming at Microsoft, gave a DICE keynote on building a living and learning company culture. He made a statement on toxic behavior, what this does to our industry as a whole, and what role we can play. We've seen that toxicity and negative experiences can have a widespread and pervasive impact. There's a personal impact. People may disengage from multiplayer or social features. They can stop playing certain titles. They may start to avoid gaming or warn others away from gaming. As Phil stated, that's pretty much the antithesis of community, much less fun. The research we've been doing is an extension of Phil's messaging here. And it builds on the great work that other companies have been doing and sharing publicly about negative experiences. This includes Riot Games, Blizzard Entertainment, and others. There's also cross-industry work getting underway. The Fair Play Alliance was announced this week. It's an initiative spanning over 30 gaming companies with a goal to collaborate on research and best practices that encourage fair play and healthy communities in online gaming. So there's momentum building across the industry in this space. Today, we're going to walk through some of the key learnings from research we've been doing over the last few years. We've framed this as three sections. The first is understanding. Melissa will talk about some of our research insights from deep dive interviews and surveys we've been doing with our players to understand their gaming experiences online. Next, Jerome will talk about some of the ways that Xbox has been hoping to address and working to address the issues that our players face. And lastly, I'll speak to ways that we're trying to positively influence the community. We've learned a lot to date, but we don't have all the answers by any stretch. As Phil said in his DICE keynote, we're learning how to figure this out. And that's part of the reason we're bringing this to you today, so we can continue the conversation and the collaboration across the industry. So I'll hand over to Melissa now to talk about understanding.
All right. So the first learning that I'll talk about that we pulled from some of our research is to connect more deeply with your audience to uncover the true scope of negative experiences that your players are having. One of the problems that we discovered when doing our research is that negative experiences can be hard to share, even when we directly ask players about them. We conducted deep dive interviews with 8 gamers from diverse backgrounds who played across a variety of platforms, genres, and games. And we interviewed them for about 2 hours to discuss several topics related to online multiplayer gaming, including experiences with harassment and toxicity while they were playing online. Even in a one-on-one environment, it was really hard for people to discuss these issues with us. Up front, we did make a mistake. We used the words harassment or toxicity when we were talking to players. And they would say, harassment? No, that seems kind of strong. That's not me. I'm not a victim. The terminology that we were using was loaded for people. But when we use more generalized or neutral language like negative experiences or tell us what's not so great about gaming, then we got people to open up more and tell us all about the different experiences that they had online, a lot of them negative. Often it also took an hour or more of building rapport with these players in order for them to reveal these experiences that they had. In some cases, they even outright refused to discuss issues with us that they'd experienced. For example, we had one player who had a very public incident that they knew about. They'd actually uploaded a video discussing it online, and we had seen that video. But when they came in and we asked them about experiences they had online, they refused to talk about it. They maintained that they had had pretty positive experiences online. So it can be really difficult for people to talk about these things when we're asking about them directly. Through the course of these interviews, we discovered that this was because players felt as if they must develop a thick skin and downplay their negative experiences. From their perspective, trolls and toxicity were everywhere. It was futile to try to avoid them or fight back, and so they had to act like they weren't bothered by their experiences in order to continue to enjoy online play. Players almost universally said that you must have a thick skin in order to play online. In fact, almost all of them used those exact words, thick skin, in order to successfully play online and protect themselves from the negative effects of toxicity. They also said that they would give this advice to other players, perhaps newer players or players coming into specific games for the first time. They'd say things like, if I'm giving advice to someone who's not really a gamer and they just want to play online, I tell them to have a thick skin because I can't think of a game that doesn't have trolls. Or have thick skin. If you don't have thick skin, you might have a bad experience online. That's why often when we ask players what it's like to play online, their first reaction might be to say, it's not that bad. I've learned how to handle myself. Or even, I'm not easily offended. That's what almost all of these players said right before they recounted some truly terrible experiences, like being called racial slurs, being defriended or ostracized because of their background, being explicitly sexually harassed, and receiving casual threats of violence. But when we dove deeper, it turns out that these players really were affected by the negative experiences that they were having. People who play online have a vested interest in being perceived as not being a victim, but once we asked them to explore those feelings more deeply, they recounted feeling sad, angry, or depressed, sometimes for days, weeks, or even months afterwards. It also changed the way that they interacted with people when they were offline and not in the gaming world. They'd say things like, sometimes it has an everlasting effect. I start to think that everyone's like that. I am constantly replaying these situations in my head. The interesting thing is that it's often players who have the longest experience and who are most engaged with gaming who are likely to respond this way, because the length of time that they have spent playing online has reinforced that need to develop that thick skin in order to play. What we also found is that players have a really high bar for what they will report to a platform, service, or developer. Even if the incident that they experience is a clear contravention of the code of conduct for whatever platform or service that they're on. The threshold that players imagine is way higher than the ones that we imagine, including the ones outlined in those codes of conduct for the services and platforms that people play. They're so inured to the experience of harassment online that things like casual slurs or threats of violence are actually below the bar of what they're willing to report. This happened for a variety of reasons, but two really rose to the top. One, when we asked directly, what did you expect to happen to the player who harassed you? Players were generally clueless about what did happen after they reported someone, or sometimes they believed that nothing would happen. They said that it was just easier to block or mute players than it was to report because they better understood the direct impact that that action would have on their own experience while they played. So they'd say things like, I don't really feel like reporting actually does anything, so sometimes I'll just block because it's easier for me to do that. We know how much time platforms, games, and services spend on trying to hear from players about their negative experiences, and yet reporting is still a black box to these players. Also, harassment happened so often, again, that players accepted things just as normal. They'd say things like, I guess a lot of people in the gaming community don't report because we've accepted these things as normal within the community. We'd even have players say things like, I kind of feel like if I were to report every time something happened, it's unnecessary trouble. I don't want them to think that I can't take anything. The them was often the service that they were reporting to. Sometimes they felt like they'd be a tattletale if they reported too often, or that the gaming platform they were on would take even their accurate reports less seriously over time if they reported a lot. The Pew Research data that Tracy referred to earlier also supports this finding. When the Pew Research Organization looked across online game engagement, not just gaming, they found that 61% of Americans who have experienced online harassment simply ignored it. Only 9% actually reported the incident to the website or platform that they were using at the time that they had the incident. So how can we hear more about these negative experiences? Well, one of the things we want to try to do is map the language that your players are using to describe bad experiences. If they're using more neutral or generalized language to describe their experiences, try mirroring what they use to connect with them more deeply and unearth some of those experiences that you really want to capture and understand. You also want to avoid language that casts the respondent as a victim. So some examples might be things like, can you tell me about a time when someone harassed you? Or tell me about a time when someone targeted you. Instead, you might want to consider language like, can you tell me about a specific time that you reported someone? Or have you ever had someone behave or communicate negatively towards you? One solution is also just being upfront with players. After we learned that this was a sensitive area for players and could prevent them from speaking up, we added statements like, I might ask you some questions about how you responded or what you did in response to a negative incident, not because I'm judging you, but because I want to know how different people might respond or act when they experience negative behaviors. This put our questions in a different context for players. It detached a little bit from the participant and allowed them to know what we were asking and that we weren't judging them for their behaviors. Also, using one-on-one or non-public methods of capturing players' feelings might better capture those feelings as we talk to them. So, for example, we might want to ask a survey that players can answer in private or deep dive interviews. This is as opposed to social media or online forums or focus groups where players might feel a little bit more exposed and less comfortable talking about these issues. A second learning from our research is that it's important to make players' online experiences, and especially these early ones, positive ones. Bad experiences often drive people away, sometimes permanently. After we conducted these deep dive interviews, we wanted to get an idea of the breadth and the magnitude of issues that players were experiencing. So we also collected some online safety servers with gamers, again, across genres, platforms, and games. And we uncovered a variety of different ways that players disengaged. Here's an example of some of the different types of disengagement that players performed when they experienced harassment or toxicity online. We found that well over half of players stopped speaking or spoke less because of what other people said to them or how other people behaved when they heard their voices. This was corroborated by the deep dive interview findings as well. Players were often targeted because of their voice or the way that their voice sounded online. Players from certain groups felt more vulnerable because they felt like their identities were outed when they engaged in voice chat. They'd say things like, I think maybe because I have a female voice, I feel more vulnerable when I'm on the mic. Or, I didn't want anyone to know I was black, because once they found out, people on my own team would start to shoot me. However, players from all kinds of backgrounds and identities can easily experience this as well. It's very easy for other players to target them and slip into that toxic behavior and language during fast-paced gaming interactions, and it's hard for platforms and services to track and address this behavior. Our online safety survey also revealed that players will leave games, or sometimes entire genres, in order to escape or avoid harassment and toxicity online. Just under a third of players said that they either spent less time playing a certain game or a certain game type online after experiencing a negative incident. So players are throwing up boundaries around huge swaths of gaming experience that were crafted for them to avoid being targeted by toxic behavior. In our deep dive interviews, players would say things like, I'm very cautious about specific games that I play because they have a stereotype for a reason, so I try to avoid them. Or, I tried a specific game for a hot minute before I quit because they're vicious in there. Over time, these avoidance behaviors spawned by people's early experiences in those games would calcify into long-term boundaries. Players might do things like mute all players at the beginning of a session or match without even thinking about it, or attempting to listen to lobby chat. Or they may completely avoid a certain game or genre's communities without ever checking back to see if those games or genres have become a more welcoming place over time. What this means is that players can also disengage completely because of their bad experiences. Again, in our online safety surveys, we uncovered that just about 1/5 of players either spent less time playing online altogether or spent less money on online gaming in response to a negative incident that they had had. Players would say things like, well, they were talking about women in kind of a derogatory way and it escalated, so I stopped playing for a while, maybe a month or so. And even in the long term, I used to play a lot more, but I've kind of slowed down because people are so childish and will troll online. And this toxicity has ripple effects. Not only does it affect the players who experience toxicity themselves directly, but there's also the players who witness that toxicity as well. About 2/3 of U.S. adults, again in that Pew research that Tracy referred to earlier, about 2/3 of U.S. adults have witnessed harassing behavior directed towards others online. That's a big chunk of the audience who is seeing this kind of stuff. And according to the Pew research, nearly half of these adults who witness this behavior have either changed their own online behavior in response to it, such as choosing not to post something or stopping using a service altogether. Then there's the giant universe of players and potential players who are warned away from multiplayer gaming by those in the first two groups who have experienced harassment directly or have seen it themselves. They'll tell their friends that they may think it's a bad idea for their friends to play online. And these are often the players who are just getting involved and who we most want to engage with new experiences. In our deep dive interviews, players would say things like, I've warned to people about specific games. I'd say, don't play that game, play the version of the game I'm playing instead. Or I'd steer them away from games I know have a toxic community, and maybe have them play in a specific genre that I think is more welcoming. So if we're thinking about growth of games, platforms, and services, we need to pay attention to how toxicity can radiate outwards and potentially have an explosive effect on the wider community. A third note on understanding players' negative experiences is that we can learn from confirmed bad experiences to understand hidden ones. For a variety of reasons that we talked about already, you're never going to hear about 100% of the bad experiences that players are having online. But there are things that we can do in order to understand these hidden bad experiences. So we can look for patterns in the bad experiences that we do hear about. Are certain communities targeted more than others? What seems to be the common types of negative experiences that players are telling you about? Then we can use those patterns to estimate the prevalence of the hidden bad experiences that we don't see. And sometimes, even if we don't have the entire picture, we can think about the severity of the impact in addition to the magnitude of it. So for example, we might not know how often casual threats of violence happen, but we can figure out, perhaps from some of those non-public methods I was talking about, like surveys or interviews, what the impact of those threats have to players and then act accordingly. A fourth learning in how to understand players' experiences was to learn how players want to support and build a community. One of the more positive and really powerful findings from our research is that community stewardship can be a really powerful motivator for positive behavior. Many of the players we interviewed had been gaming for many years, and they saw themselves as stewards of a larger gaming community. This often motivated them to engage in positive behavior to support other players. So for example, players would say things like, I know that a lot of online gaming platforms are trying to build welcoming communities, and so if I can do something to help that, I definitely will. Or I'm one of those people that I care, so I want to make sure that other people are being taken care of and having a fun time. We also see this again reflected in that Pew research across online engagement. 30% of Americans have intervened after witnessing online harassment in different ways, like directly responding to the harasser, flagging or reporting that content or behavior, or even offering support to the person being harassed. So this is a potentially large part of the audience whose motivations that we can leverage to promote positive behavior in online gaming communities. So I just talked a little bit about understanding, and now I'm going to hand it off to Jerome to talk about addressing.
All right, so Melissa talked about a lot of research learnings for how we better understand players' negative experiences. And moving on, I'm going to talk about how we've applied some of that research to addressing negative online experiences. And this will be through some examples, both on the Xbox itself and through some Microsoft Studios titles. As Tracy said at the beginning, we're definitely still learning. We're not going to be talking about addressing 100% of things, but what we really, why we really wanted to talk about this is to start to build and start to share things that we're doing so that others can build on them and take them even farther so we can continue growing it as an industry. So our first learning for addressing is to make it easy and enable players to reach you. So this involves making it very obvious for players to reach you and making it very immediate for players to reach you. So the reason for this is we've learned in our research, Melissa talked about lots of complex reasons why players don't tell us about their negative experiences. But we've also learned that there are many players who don't report bad experiences that they want to report. So they want to report them, they're willing to, but they don't report to us for one reason or another. And thankfully, we discovered a couple of simple reasons for that. One is just not seeing reporting options, and also not having reporting options immediately available when you need them. So we're going to walk through one example from Xbox One. So this is the messaging from Xbox One. This is how it looked around the time that Xbox One launched. So this is a place where you can send and receive both text and voice messages. And in terms of negative experiences, people could send you a very negative, toxic message, something that violates the code of conduct. And as Xbox, of course, we want everybody to be reporting those. So with how this worked at launch, it was unfortunately a lot less discoverable than we wanted it to be. If you wanted to report a specific message, actually what that involved was moving the cursor to a specific message, pressing a button, and then there was a reporting option behind it. And that really didn't meet the bar when we launched in terms of how much we were seeing people report, and it was a real miss for us. So we really wanted to enable, as we said, as many people as possible to report the negative experiences. So we made a change with a hypothesis that it would better enable players to reach us. So you see there that if you received that message that says you're welcome, there's an immediate button right there that says report message. It's something that shows up for every message. It's something that's always available, and it's right there. So if that you're welcome violated the code of conduct, you could report it right away. So if you were to guess on impact, you would probably guess, this is really obvious, probably more people will hit that report message button and they will report it. But you might also have another concern. Maybe the reason why people would report more is just because it's right there and they might do it accidentally, or they might just do it frivolously, just reporting on things that aren't actually negative. So it's something we wanted to look closely at, and once it was released, we looked at the numbers. So after just that one change, just that adding that report message button, we did see that we were definitely better enabling players to reach us. So after that change, the number of reports on messages we received went up by 200%. And to that concern about accuracy, we didn't see a decrease in accuracy of the messages we received. We actually saw a big boost in the number of accurate reports we received. So that went up 330%. And what that means in terms of being accurate, it was something that our policy enforcement team was able to verify that violates the code of conduct, and they were able to take action on it. So that was a huge difference and something that became a permanent change. So this example is just one example on one feature of enabling players to reach us. And we definitely have a lot of remaining work to do to better enable players to reach us in a lot of other places. But hopefully you can see the potential of anywhere players can have those negative online experiences. How can you make reporting extremely obvious? How can you make it immediately available in the place where they have the bad experience? And like us, you might be surprised by the huge benefits that we saw. So our next learning for addressing issues is to enable players to avoid bad experiences. So unfortunately, in many games, players are penalized when they try to avoid bad experiences. They might be penalized by other players, like for example, the research that Melissa talked about, where people react negatively when they hear people's voices. It can also be the case that players react negatively when people don't use voice. And it can be something that they feel penalized by the game itself. It can be something where the game penalizes them for leaving a game session because they were having a bad experience. And it can also be that the game just isn't offering them the tools that they need to be able to manage bad experiences when they come up. So issues and solutions here are often very specific to the situation. So we're going to talk about a specific game. So this is Sea of Thieves, as created by Rare. It came out this week, and for people who aren't familiar with it, you play as a pirate, you go on adventures on ships, and a big part of it is joining together with crews of other pirates and going off and encountering other pirates and deciding what to do, whether to work with them, work against them, to achieve your goals. So throughout development, they really used research learnings from some of the research that we've talked about to work on enabling players to avoid bad experiences. And one thing that was really important to them that turned out to be key is to integrate solutions in a way that matched the pirate theme and that fit into the gameplay. They wanted to be a natural part of the gameplay, and they wanted to be something that these aren't just tools just to decrease badness, they're also tools to increase the fun you can have. So I'm going to go through a few examples from Sea of Thieves. Of course, this is something that we're still working on, as with many things with Sea of Thieves right now, but we've already seen some benefits that we wanted to share. So as I mentioned, some people encounter issues when they use voice, when they don't use voice, and of course some people aren't able to use voice. That may be permanent for them, or it can be situational, like for example, playing in a room where other people are sleeping late at night, things like that. So Sea of Thieves has introduced some quick communication options, and these include these quick messages, character and mode options. And when they thought about these, they're really trying to maximize the player value and cover as many communication needs as possible so that people could have a good experience without needing to use voice. So one really important thing about what they've done here is that these are customized for the context of what you're doing at the moment. So if you are at the wheel of the ship, like you are here, there's a lot of communication options that are directly related to your role in steering the ship. So there are a lot of things where you can communicate to your crew about what you want them to do at the sails, dropping the anchor, getting a compass bearing, and all of these things are intended to make this as full-featured as possible so people can have a good experience no matter how they're communicating. So there are a couple other features that they introduced to empower players to avoid some specific negative situations. One of them is the brig. So for example, you might have a player who joins your crew and they are causing problems of some kind. Of course, if it's bad enough, you always have the option to kick them entirely, report them to the service. But sometimes pirates just need to learn a lesson. So the brig was introduced as something that enables players to have control over how they want to deal with this. So players on the crew can vote to put somebody in the brig and then decide what to do from there. So you can have them negotiate, have them apologize, have them do whatever fits most. And we've seen already a lot of positive examples of people using this in a playful and fun role-playing way to add to the experience of being a pirate. So the second option is to scuttle your ship. So another situation you might run into is you encounter another crew of pirates. They may want to steal your treasure, like pirates do. That can be fun for a while, but you could run into a situation where there's a crew that just won't leave you alone, and it's no longer fun to do that. So they introduced an option to scuttle your ship. So what that does is removes you, your crew, and the ship from the situation and puts them in a different place so that you can continue to have a better experience, not in the proximity of this crew that won't leave you alone. So in alphas and betas, we've definitely seen these features have positive effects, and they're continuing to undergo tweaking. There's definitely still work to do, and there's a lot of negative experiences that we want to continue to enable players to avoid. But when you think about features like this, I think a couple of the important takeaways are making sure that these features to help players avoid negative experiences are built in a natural part of the gameplay as much as possible. And the other part is to make sure that it isn't just a feature to get away from bad, that it's a feature that can add to the fun for people. So our last learning on addressing negative experiences is to enable players to create their ideal experiences. This is something that it's going beyond just avoiding the bad that I was talking about, and that they can create an experience that's perfect for them and they can join up with other like-minded players. So the reason for this is that we've learned in our research that it's difficult for default experiences to be right for everyone. So across everyone who plays online games, they don't necessarily have shared expectations, they don't necessarily have shared norms, they definitely don't necessarily have the same experiences, and we heard some of that from some of the things that Melissa was talking about. And it was something that we wanted to do something at a platform level on Xbox to empower players by offering them tools to help shape experiences that are great for them. So to this end, in 2016, we introduced a feature called Clubs on Xbox. This was informed by research about helping players have better social experiences. And with clubs, you can create or join a club for like-minded people. It helps people come together, it helps people communicate, and it's something for where you can join together with people who communicate and play in similar ways. So within a club, you can gather, you can talk, you can hang out, but of course, being on a gaming platform, gaming is a very important part of it. So the looking for group feature is integrated deeply into clubs, and that's something where members of your club can set up private sessions that are based on different games, they can be at different times, and they can be with different requirements so that you can gather together with people you know are like-minded and have exactly the kind of experience that you want. And a really important part of clubs is signposting what kind of experience is expected and what those rules and expectations are. So you see at the bottom, you can put in a club description, that's something that everybody sees, and you can put in different requirements for people to join your club, but one really important, fairly simple thing is you'll see in the middle there are some tags for things that apply to this club. So, for example, mic required for this club, no trash talking, they're competitive, things like that. So that's something that immediately signposts to people who are looking at this club. This is what the experience is here. And it's something that it's not only something that you just have to kind of go through and see, is this right, is this right, is this right. You can also search directly on any of those tags. Like, for example, if it's really important to you, that mic is not required, and find all the clubs that have that right experience for you. So now we're going to hear from Brian Jeans. He leads the part of the Xbox Live team focusing on clubs. And he's going to talk about the importance of having shared social expectations for players and how clubs tries to enable that for our players.
The area where clubs has brought the most change is everyone now has a place where they can be themselves. Historically, and it's still this way, if you just do standard matchmaking, there's a standard set of rules. Now, what are those standard set of rules in a social environment? If you go into a bar, you kind of know the bar you go into, kind of what the behavior might be by just walking in and looking at it. When you go into a multiplayer session, what is the expected behavior? Well, with clubs, we've created that scene that is like, you know, sort of like a bar or like a recreational club that you might go to, or like a playground. We've created these environments where when you walk into it, there's a set of rules. You somewhat know now how you're supposed to behave.
Well, so Brian there talked about the experience they were trying to create, and once Clubs was released, we wanted to measure whether there was a significant impact across all the players using Clubs. So we have seen an impact in several ways, including one really important way that people connect online. And on Xbox Live, that is adding friends to your friends list so that there are people you can contact and play with later. And so it's something for any player just in the first month of joining at least one club, 60% of players actually add friends to their friends list from clubs they've joined. It's something across all of Xbox. We've seen a 25% boost in the average number of friends since Clubs was introduced. So we're starting to see some of the benefits of people connecting together. So in addition, we talked a lot about helping players create those ideal experiences, but it's also really important that there is that Clubs has an aspect of allowing people to move away from negative experiences that they have. And so we really wanted Clubs to be a tool set for players to do both and help people find the right experiences for them. So I talked some about numbers, and Brian's going to talk a little bit about some player stories we've heard of Clubs about them decreasing negative experiences for them. So let's hear those stories.
The one club where we've heard maybe more positive feedback is actually the LGBT club. There's an LGBT social club where people have complained about, hey, I go online, I start talking, and all of a sudden, people are disparaging me, or I can't feel like I can be myself. Thank you, Microsoft, for finally providing me an area where I can be myself and find others like me. I think that, you know, the two clubs that come to mind where I've actually had the owners of club or members of those club come back to us and say thank you is one, the LGBT club, and then two, the Xbox Gaming Girls Social Club. Those are the two where, you know, they felt like they finally gotten out of this world of toxicity and into a place where they feel comfortable going online, getting their microphone on, and actually having a fun multiplayer gaming experience.
To some of those negative experiences that Brian's talking about, absolutely, we continue to work really hard on preventing and taking action on negative experiences, no matter where you are on Xbox. But for clubs specifically, it's been really positive to see these positive steps forward in terms of players being able to create a space and create ideal experiences for themselves. There is still a lot of work to be done, both in improving clubs, and one of the areas that we're working on is integrating them more deeply into more gameplay experiences so that they're right there for people. And also, of course, there's more work to be done in other tools to help people create the ideal experiences that they want to have. So hopefully a feature like this gives you some jumping off points to think about. Definitely thinking about ways to enable players to define the ideal experiences they want to have, to create them, and to easily find like-minded people to have those experiences with. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Tracy, who's going to talk about influencing.
In the last section, Jerome talked about different features that can help to create more positive online gaming experiences at a platform and a game level. There are also ways that you can influence the culture of your community, and we're going to talk about the key learnings related to that. The first, related to influencing, is lead by example and set the tone. We've seen in our research that many players follow the lead of perceived community norms. In interviews we ran with game streamers, we saw how clearly many streamers kind of hone and craft their community norms and their values, and how those values are introduced to and reinforced to new members by existing community members. We've also seen this across games, where development teams have a philosophy about the type of community they want to create. And Minecraft is an example of this. Over 100 million people play Minecraft. And the Minecraft community team have been specifically focusing on defining the norms of their community and how they can best help to spread those norms. We're going to hear from Helen Zeebly, Minecraft's community manager, about some of the core community norms that Minecraft has established, which reflect the idea of leading by example and setting the tone.
All-inclusiveness. Don't exclude people, especially don't exclude people based on something that, like, ethnicity or anything like that, right? Include everybody, even if it's now, of course, there's going to be different communities for different interests, and that's fine too, right? For instance, like, a builder may not find their home in the PvP community, right? Because it's a different style of play. But we also have a no-tolerance policy on bullying. That's a very strong thing that we stand by, and because of that, the rest of the Minecraft community has basically followed suit. So you'll go on to other particular communities and they also will say, you know what, this is not the place for bullying, right? This is not tolerated here.
Helen just talked about some of the values that are important to the team and the values that they try to instill in their communities. Obviously, with 100 million players, this reaches some corners of the community faster than others, so it can take time. The key takeaway here, though, is to think about what kind of community you want to create and have a point of view on what that looks like and what you value so that you have a place to start. In Minecraft, point of view is something they try to introduce to other players as those players go on to create their own communities. In this next video, Helen talks about creating an environment or a launching pad that enables other players to create healthy communities.
So my approach is that artificial community channels are more of incubators. So we basically form a solid base for individual community members to then meet other community members, to find other community members with similar interests, and then to go off and form their own communities, whether that's on YouTube or Discord or even their own forums or websites. We more see it as a launching pad for community members to go and make their individual communities. We also try to lead by example so that when they do make their own communities, they're already going ahead and doing things that will build a positive community experience rather than, you know, a horrible or toxic one.
Helen talked about the role that Minecraft plays in setting the tone of their community and how that can have a network effect by spreading to other communities. Another one of our research learnings related to influencing is about collaborating with your community to create positive or healthy norms. And this night learning ties in with the community stewardship insights that Melissa talked about earlier. In that research, we saw how a sense of connectedness and the desire for deep social connection can foster a sense of community stewardship. We also saw this in our game streamers research. For some streamers, the intrinsic motivation of giving back or helping their viewers feel safe and positive and supported is one of the most important qualities of streaming. Many players are motivated to give back to a community or to influence its development. And Sea of Thieves is one example of this, where the developer Rare worked closely with the community to shape their community norms. As a new type of multiplayer game, Rare wanted to create a welcoming world for all kinds of players. They decided to create a pirate code that outlines how the community expects players to engage with one another, both in-game and across the community. So they collaborated directly with their players to craft the pirate code, asking for input on ideas, suggestions for new content, and honing the language together. As Rare said on their forums at the time, "We think that social guidelines are best created in partnership with the community. We also believe that these guidelines will carry more weight for new members upon realizing that they were written by their peers." So another key takeaway here is to think about where it makes sense for you to leverage these community stewardship motivations in your players and to enable them to take an active role in the well-being of their community. This segues into the last learning on influencing, recognizing and supporting players who help the community. This can have a big impact on players. Within Xbox, we have programs to recognize people like Xbox MVPs, Xbox ambassadors, and our mixer partners. But here we're going to talk a little about what Minecraft does in this area. Helen talks about how Minecraft recognizes players when they contribute positively to the community, such as inviting them to guest stream, and how that visible recognition impacts others across the community.
We also have community members come in and we'll have them on live streams. They'll be guest hosts on our live streams. So it's a lot of recognition. It's basically pulling someone out and saying, hey, you're doing a great job. You are doing a wonderful job of fostering the Minecraft community. You're one of our leaders within the community, and we're going to recognize that. And so other people then will see what those other folks are doing, and they'll say, hey, I want to be recognized too, right? I want to be a moderator. I want to be an admin. So then they will follow those footsteps because it's all a pattern of positive reinforcement. And I think that positive reinforcement is often more powerful than negative reinforcement or punishment because you're already teaching that positivity. You're teaching those positive behaviors, and then they can see for themselves that there are positive consequences to positive actions, and that encourages more of that positive behavior.
So that was an example of how Minecraft recognizes and rewards the types of healthy norms they want to establish and helps people to embed those norms. In this final video, Helen describes the ongoing support and training they provide to players as a tool set to create more positive Minecraft communities.
So we also try to make ourselves very accessible to the community. So when they do go off and form their own communities, they know they can come back to us and they can say, hey, you know, my Minecraft community is doing this. You know, what do you think I should do? And stuff like that. So we also teach our expertise in the community management field to our community members. We also recently started doing, or will start doing, brown bags on our Discord for our moderators to teach them more about community management for games. And that's been really well received.
This kind of support can be invaluable for players as they can create and continue to maintain healthy communities in an ongoing capacity. Although you may not always have the resources to provide training for your own community members, think about ways that you can support your community and empower them to embed the norms that you want to see. Whatever level you can invest, it can spread across the community in positive ways. So we've talked about 10 principles across these three categories. These are some of the learnings we've developed to date around understanding and addressing players' negative online gaming experiences. This is a complex and nuanced space, as many of you know. We've made some small steps and we've had some small wins. However, we've got a long way to go and we've still got a lot to learn. As I mentioned at the beginning, there's a lot of great work happening in this area. We'd like to continue the conversation and the collaboration across the industry. Thanks for your time.